It's not working. It's not working. Get rid of them all.
Kick them all. 10 men rugby.
Hello everyone and welcome to this is episode 6, is it? Of the Duncan and Duncan podcast. So we were stood down last week to make room for more important occasions like the Cheltenham Festival. So they were under massive pressure in the studio last week.
Rumours were we were fired.
That's right.
Yeah. Received feedback.
We've revived. We've come back to life. So
my brother actually texted me saying, "Is there no podcast this week?" I was like, "No, Cheltenham's." He's like, "That's not until next week." I was like, maybe we are fired, actually.
Build back up the cynicism.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, who knows if Cheltenham's going to... Well, it's going to go ahead now, but I suppose who knows what the consequences are going to be after today's news. But anyway, that's an aside. Joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, the delightful Duncan Williams. Duncan, how are you this week?
Very good. How are you?
Very well, very well. And I'm delighted to welcome into studio our old colleague and Cork legend. Across multiple sports at this point, Johnny Holland.
Yeah,
Johnny, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. So I suppose, yeah, if this is as much of a catch-up for me as it is for an interview because I haven't spoken to you in a while now. Yeah. So can you give us an update on what you've been up to?
Oh, the last couple of years. I obviously retired, was it 3.5 years ago now?
Yes, that jeez.
Yeah, time goes on. Yeah. Other people retire in the meantime and all of a sudden time is moving. But yeah, it's 3.5 years. It's going closer to 4 years now again. But I did postgrad in sports and exercise nutrition. I did get a job for a small while, which was a bit of a learning curve out in the real world. It was supposed to be a little project and it went on for a year, which was actually a good learning curve. It was good to go in there, but I always wanted to kind of move on. So I went out on my own. So I'm self-employed, nutrition business, kind of a bit of training, personal training.
You might as well throw in the name now. And
I'm self-employed, so it's johnnyholland10.com is the plug. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so it's nutrition mainly, and I got involved with Cork GAA, so that's the big thing at the moment. Like I'm kind of, last year I was with the both senior sides in terms of hurling and football, and this year it's kind of going a little bit further in terms of trying to educate down the ladder a small bit towards 20s, minors and Revelogue. And that's interesting because you get to speak to a lot of different coaches and S&C coaches, some guys that you might know as well, like Kieran O'Regan is there. He's involved in us in Cork Con, and I suppose that's the other part of this explanation, is that I stayed involved in coaching, and it wasn't something I thought I would do. But then, you know, in Con they're very good at keeping you involved, whether it's for your benefit or theirs, probably both. And to be fair to Gerry Holland, he roped me in formally for one night a week, which became 3 nights a week, and that was with the under-20s 4 seasons ago. And then I stepped up to the senior side, and I've been there, this is my 3rd year with the senior side, so myself and Duncan have caught up a lot more than I have with you. Duncan's with us there, but
that's what I was going to ask you, actually. Do you think the layoff kind of help you discover that passion for coaching? Because obviously you're not at the place where you're watching a lot more rugby, watching training, little things.
I think it actually was a fear of not being involved in rugby, and you know the way rugby moves on fairly quickly. Like it was a fear of not. I think just once fellas kind of lose touch with it, there's another guy retiring or there's another thing going on, and the game moves quite quickly and the laws change quite quickly as well. So different things like that. I just didn't want to give it up yet, and I didn't want to detach from the sport, I suppose. So I stayed kind of involved, and then I did quite enjoy the coaching. I kind of thought, you know, I wouldn't coach because I'd be 35 and not 25 retiring, but I felt I did have some knowledge in my head for someone to pick up on. Like obviously playing professionally but not going to international level or whatever, there's always somebody with more experience than you, but there was somebody that would have, you know, gained value from what I had learned in a professional environment as well. So that's what I wanted to try and pass on, and obviously enjoy kind of speaking about that and helping people as well, like, you know.
You're going to give your mentor Brian Hickey an old shout out there?
He gets enough shout outs, does he? Yeah. I've been working with him 3 years now.
And you still have all the hairs in your head. It's amazing.
But you know, one of the first pre-season sessions when I stepped up to the senior side, a rude awakening in terms of coaching. You can you can learn all the rugby you want, and Vicky actually said to me, a lovely day, it's sunny in Cargan, different to what it's like at the moment, but we were doing a drill and side-by-side passing drill, so everybody had a chance to get their hand on the ball as much as possible. Like, and Vicky said, damn it, move them cones 5 yards apart. Like, so I went, everybody pick up your cones and move 5 yards, like, kind of trying to get it going. And he just went, Johnny, pick up the first cone and put it to the bottom, and everything moves out by 5 yards, you know. And I was like, jeez, I have a lot to learn here. So
I'd say he was very good at easing you into it as well. Very kind, holding your hand, walking you through it.
It was straight into the deep end, but you do learn kind of practical things as opposed to rugby as well, like, you know, and how to deal with a group. And it's definitely an interesting one.
It's a good, to be fair to you, like, it's, you need a certain type of personality to be able to deal with a certain type of personalities that are involved in the playing side of CAN. So I think you have a good balance. Vicky does the probably
cop back up.
Yeah, exactly. I said a few weeks ago, like, to be fair, the club would be lost without him. Like, the amount of work he actually does behind the scenes. He goes to, like, probably 4 games every weekend.
He goes to too many games, but, like, he's that involved in it. Like,
how long has he been involved in CAN as a coach?
I don't know how long in total, but he left for a few years to Cashel, and he came back. He must be 5 or 6 years there now.
He was there pretty much when I started. The first, it was Terry Kingston, then he came in, or was the other way around, and then he was back again. So I'd say he's gone on nearly 15 years in total, I'd say.
Possibly, yeah. But, you know, the amount of work he does, because I mean, I speak to him 2, 3, 4 times a day on the phone. I'm not the only one, you know, so there's a lot of conversations going on.
He loves to chat over an old ice cream as well. There's this ice cream place next to his office in town.
Oh, yeah?
So I meet you for an ice cream. Casanova. You can try to take that man seriously when he's eating an ice cream.
He's a good man for National Dean as well.
I've
routinely met him in
there. Keep changing
his spot. To touch on the GAA, Johnny. You obviously come from a GAA background yourself.
I played a bit, yeah. Like, yeah. I would have played a lot of football, but I didn't play a whole lot of hurling. But, like, we would have watched it growing up and stuff like that. Like, my friends all played hurling. I just didn't take to it.
Yeah.
I didn't like getting beaten with a stick. You know? So I didn't play that one. Well, I wasn't very good at it either. I was chatting to someone recently, a podcast, and
on the
circuit.
Yeah.
One of the ones on the circuit.
Exactly, journeyman.
But they said, what were you not so good at? And I was like, Jesus, hurling probably, even though that's embarrassing enough.
Yeah.
But, like, it's actually class watching them, the pace that, you know, you puck around yourself, like, but you wouldn't go near pucking around if you're in that kind of a session, because the lads are just so sharp. Like, it's class.
And how do you find, say, obviously your remit is nutrition when it comes to dealing with intercounty players. So how do you find that, given that they're amateur athletes, and obviously GAA would have a bit of a perception of being a bit behind the likes of rugby when it comes to, I suppose, S&C in general and nutrition in general. So how have you found that has been challenging?
It's challenging, but it's also great from my point of view. I mean, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that you can tidy up straight away. Like, you know, and there's fellas from all corners of the county, which, you know, some are more raw than others. And it's easier to pick up a couple of things. Like, you'd be surprised at how basic some of the knowledge is. But then... Yeah, you'd be surprised at how much other guys have picked up as well. And, you know, things move on as well. Like, it's not that they were wrong at any stage, but things do move on, and you have to try and retrain that thought in a certain sense as well. But, you know, it's good from my end that I had been involved in a professional environment. Like, you know, so the lads are always looking to learn, and they do trust me in that sense as well. Like, you know, so it has been good. But, I mean, it is challenging in terms of they all have full-time jobs, and I have to understand that. You know, I think it's actually been good for me that I had to have a full-time job before I went in there, because now I understand them a good bit more, you know. But they are nearly professional athletes in terms of time committed to the sport, but they have
they're
to go to full-time. It's mad. But I said the same about Conor. When I'm coaching, I'd have to go from work to coaching, and I'd be like, Jesus, I'm wrecked here. How are the lads actually talking out?
Yeah.
And then you go to the GAA like that, and it's another level up. Like, and
What's the time commitment in a week? Say, I know it's league campaign at the moment, but what does a regular intercounty week look like at this time of year?
They would generally show up a good 4 times a week, like, you know.
The distance some of them are driving, like, phenomenal. Like,
some of them, like, you know, they're coming from Bantry and Knocknagree and places I wouldn't have even heard of in Cork before.
They always strike you as lads, you say, do this, and they're like, right, that's it, they're doing it. Like, nothing's kind of 50-50.
Oh, they do, to be fair. Like, if you tell them do something, they're all in, like, and which is a great way to be, you know. It's good to get a buy in from a coaching point of view. When they're like that, they're looking to soak it up, like, and they're looking for any way to improve their game, as you'd be used to in terms of professional environments. But, you know, if they're being given something, they do appreciate it. Like, but at the other side of it, I hate when things get taken away, for any whatever reason, because, you know, they're amateurs, they're working full time, or they're students and they're learning and they're young, but, like, you know, you want to try and get them as much as they can be given to help out their lifestyle, because, you know, I don't give anyone the excuse of time, really, but then with these guys you have to kind of put that aside, because time is an issue. You know, they go from, some guys are traveling, like one lad was an apprentice for a while, he's getting up at 6 o'clock going to work, he wouldn't finish until about, you know, half four or 5 o'clock, get up to training, get, see the physio, do a bit of a warm up into training, you might not finish till 9 o'clock. If that's coming into the summer and you really need to nail things down, like 9:30, 9 some of the time, you know, the weather, it's bright and they stay on the pitch, and then he has to go home. How's he supposed to prepare meals or get lunches ready or get his gear ready or clothes ready, wash things, you know what I mean? It's quite difficult. Like, so you do have to remember that you're dealing with guys who don't, they are a bit time poor depending on their own situation. Like,
yeah, I have a tremendous amount of admiration for anyone that plays intercounty sport at any level, but particularly one of the bigger counties. I mean, it does blow my mind, the commitment that they have, and the fact that they can motivate themselves to do that, like, year after year, to, like, you know, 10, 15 years, certain guys.
Yeah.
I'd struggle to picture a lot of rugby players kind of buying into something like that. I know that, well, it's different when you've done it for a living. Yeah. Like, you couldn't, well, you could, but it would be far, far more difficult to adjust to that. But just the hunger that you'd have to, like that, I mean, 4 evenings a week or whatever it is with the game at the weekend, and it's literally taking up every second of your free time. And like you were saying, you were surprised with the time commitment of the Cannes guys as well.
Yeah.
I'd be the exact same. I mean, the club rugby nowadays is very much, I know, when, like, saying Shannon, and I would imagine most AIL teams at the moment, like, you've got your 2 evenings a week, which, I mean, you've got at least kind of 1 squad weight session a week, maybe 2. That's 4 evenings a week again, even though you're not on the pitch for the 4 evenings.
It is, though. It pretty much is.
If you're travelling up the north, like, the Shannon lads played City of Armagh last weekend, and they left at... or 2 weekends ago, rather, and they left at 4:30 on a Friday. Like, they didn't get back till, I don't know, probably midnight on...
Like, we went to Sligo and Ballinhinch this year, this side of Christmas, like, and they're both journeys, you know. You're leaving at 2:30 on a Friday and you're not getting home till 11 or 12 o'clock on the Saturday. That's a long journey after being training for the week, and I suppose it's the same as a coach, but it's not exactly the same. You're not doing the gym sessions, you know, you're not doing the Monday and Wednesday, even though the lads can do that in their own time if they have to, but if the club wants to buy in and get a culture, and some there are core groups that do it 4 nights a week, like, and then they go and play at the weekend, it's insane, like.
Aidan, obviously, Aidan O'Connell obviously started a new role with Cartier recently. Have you had much dealings with them?
I've had loads of dealings with Aidan. because I suppose I would have worked, probably the only person who worked across both squads last year, because there wasn't too many that did that. But obviously Aidan's overseeing quite a bit now across all the squads, and he would probably pick my brain a bit on how things worked, and I definitely feed back information on anything that I would have an issue with or anything that I would see to be an issue for other people. I would kind of I would try to help Aidan in terms of his role as well as much as I can. Like, but yeah, we definitely chat quite a bit, especially when he came in first, like, you know, trying to understand the lay of the land. Of course he knows quite a bit of it, because he was involved with Cork in 2010 when they won a football All-Ireland, so he knows it and he loves Cork. But that's
it was a great appointment for them, and it's a great job for him, I think.
Oh, he was waiting for it. He loves it. Like, he loves Cork GAA.
I think it'll be, just even as a person in general, I think it's a great appointment for them. I think he'll add loads to that. The organisation.
Like, so much experience, because, like, you forget that he was up in Leinster and Ireland and with the RFU, and then back to Munster for a number of years. Like, you'd even forget about the Leinster stint.
He was always great for judging, like, the mood of people on the Monday. Yeah. You know, if he came in after a game and it didn't go well or went well or whatever, he always, like, had a 2-minute segment before we started training that would either pick people up or give them a reality check.
A bit of a rock song.
You know, so he was a great dancer also.
I don't know if anyone in Cork realises that he doesn't like game day so much, though.
Maybe
he's less attached to it at the moment, but...
Loves the celebration behind the post as well. For
he gets two royal ups, so he has to keep himself away from match days.
Like. Remember, he used to take us for the warm-ups in the match days, but, like, we'd go down for, like, say, 7 or 8 minute warm-up, whatever. We'd just be chatting for 8 minutes, because then he'd get sidetracked. All right, lads, we're back in there, high knees. And then go on, and he'd get sidetracked again, and it was gas.
I remember that was that game against Northampton when Zeeb scored the hat-trick. It was the first try, he was behind the post.
He's shooting across the screen, like, every time, this is it.
But he was like, he ran at him, and Zeeb completely ignored him, like, so we were like, oh, Jesus, God, that's not going to go down well at all.
Another Aidan is a good man as well in the GAA for a celebration, Aidan Kelleher, the doc. Caught on camera last year celebrating a goal up in Croke Park, in behind the goal, like, ran onto the pitch, gave a pat in the back, ran back again. Another fellow with quite a bit of emotion towards Cork GAA. Good guy, loves it.
To go back in time a little bit, Johnny. So it was like you're from Tokyo. You went to school in Kloshkrestri. So neither would be kind of a hot bit of rugby activity, I suppose it's fair to say. So where did the love of rugby come from, and why was it rugby versus GA ultimately?
It was actually, I played a lot of soccer when I grew up as well. You know, so I played it. I suppose being a triplet, you were shoved out of the house. Play everything there, get out of my sight. But no, I was always the one that had, like, if you went hanging around and then you go to the shop, Johnny, hang on to the ball, like, you know, because it's probably my ball in the first place, and I'll hold on to the dirty, kind of mucky ball while everyone else enjoys themselves. But yeah, we played soccer, we played like football in the bars, and then we played rugby very young, because my dad actually played with Douglas, and he was playing junior rugby over there, and he had to coach the youngsters then as captain or something over there. I think that's how it kind of worked out, but we played over there, and myself and my brother shoved over to Douglas at 5 or 6, and it was always kind of like, draw, the three sports kind of went side by side, but like soccer took the, was at the forefront for a long time, and then I suppose rugby, play a rugby match depending on what was going on, like, and then we took the GA quite seriously, football quite seriously as well, kind of 14, 15, 16 minor, but I stopped playing after minor, like, and I think rugby, just because the under 18 stuff, or the South Munster, the regional stuff, started about 16 or 17, and you know, I liked rugby anyway. I got a bit hot headed for soccer. I was starting to lose my skills and get more frustrated. And a small bit of contact suited me, because you could get a bit of frustration out in the contact area, but too much contact obviously didn't suit me, because I'm not a very big guy. So, but that bit of balance kind of did suit my temperament, I suppose. And I learned a lot of harsh lessons given out to people and referees and different things, but it was that bit of discipline maybe. And I did enjoy the game, like, you know.
My first memory of you would have been, I remember, well, sorry, not first memory, but hearing about you, was Ken O'Connell. So Johnny Holland, I'm telling you now, next 10 for Munster. I said, Ken, who are you talking about? Like, I didn't know. You weren't in the academy at this stage.
I didn't play.
You're probably still only 17 or 18, I'd say. Because I must have been only in the, I'd say must have been in my last year academy, just first year out maybe. And he was going to have months. And then I think you were out at session one day, and he was on the sideline, and he introduced me to you.
Oh yeah,
but I thought, geez, that's who Johnny Holland is now. Yeah,
great. Because we went up to under 18 camps. It turned out that, like, myself and OB, Kevin O'Byrne, were in the same under 18 side, but he didn't go to a lot of camps, and I ended up going to every camp without getting selected in the end. Like, but I was the only Munster lad going up for a long while, and Tom Nyan and himself would drive up because they were both involved. And because it was just the three of us, I didn't get to train anymore, so the three of us would go up. Like, and you get stories the whole way up from Ken and Tom, which is great crack. Like, but Ken was there for the first, my first under 18 session. Ken took one of the, so they split up into like four drills. So he took one drill, Johnny Lacey took another one, and I don't remember who took the other two, but like that will tell you enough. If you remember Johnny Lacey and Ken O'Connell, but they were two very different people. So Ken obviously coaches the person quite a bit, which made him an unbelievable coach. And you learn quite a bit that way as well, that like you need to coach people as opposed to just the drills. But Johnny Lacey then was very like disciplined and used scare tactics. But then you'd like get to know Johnny Lacey later on in life. He's not anything like that. But Ken continued his way, like, with the academy. There's
that,
so many good
that reminds you of one of the first BNI Cup campaigns. Remember Ken was the assistant coach? Or was he forwards coach? Axel was head coach, and Cozzy was backs coach, I think. Ken was forwards coach, whatever he was, anyway, but he was running out with the water. So we were playing in Clonmel, I think, against Cornish Pirates, or maybe it was Leinster, actually, sorry. It was actually in interpose before the BNI, and we were losing. I think we got a try to go within like 5 or something, and Ken ran out with the water, and we were like, lads were taking the conversion, like, so we're all getting back from the half lane ready to kick off, because they had the old earpiece in, like, he's like, yeah. Just fucking win, lads. As if that was a message that came directly down into the ear. Like, everyone just turned around and erupted laughing. Like, straight away. He ran off again.
Johnny Lacey, with the Irish 20s, trained against us in Carcon recently. And Johnny was telling a story as well about Ken, how they were giving the coaching workshop. Like, and they went through tactically how to enter the ruck and like the breakdown and what you want to do in the breakdown. A load of different things, like real coaching aspects. Like, and Ken just pretty much summed it up with, just fucking blast the shit out of it, like, you know, just run through the middle of it, bust fellas, like, all this kind of stuff. This is the way he coached, like, bust fellas, running, blowing.
Yeah, he was a good man to simplify things, all right. He was a great guy to have around.
Remember he was in the academy. He was coming in, we used to have weights at like 7 in the morning in Cork. Kept rocking like 5 to 8. Give him a round of high five, shout 100. We're going to do a load of reps on the bench about 100. Then go eat everyone's breakfast outside. Take bananas off the thing and eat them. Like, I actually brought that in with me for me.
Yeah, he's an institution in Munster Rugby. Like, it's a real pity he's not going to knock around the academy anymore. Because he was
really good at
motivating guys
that are getting people
at
to
a
buy
certain
in.
Point in their career.
Good gag in my hair, like, actually, probably would have gone on very well.
Oh, yeah. No, we did.
he was telling me to whip it over for about 10 years.
Advice you should have followed, yeah, I suppose, yeah, 10 years ago, in fairness.
But he actually settles fellas down, you know, straight away. He just breaks the tension and guys can actually be themselves a small bit more and learn after that. Like, you know, instead of you go to all those representative things and you're afraid of your life to put a toe over the line, like, and it's not because of the environment. It drives itself in terms of young fellas coming in and being afraid of the consequences, but Ken just makes it funny all of a sudden and, you know, breaks the ice and everyone's laughing and gets to know each other very quickly, you know, so he's unbelievable that way.
Your experience of being a club player, so obviously, like, Munster's quite different to Leinster, and I would assume Ulster as well, in the sense that there actually in recent years quite a lot of guys coming through the club system, but it was only kind of ahead of you coming in today that I started thinking about it, and very few of them are backs. Actually, it tends to be forwards that do come through the club system.
Agricultural.
So, agricultural hard bastards, yeah. But what was your experience of being a 10, and I suppose we're going back to like 2009, 2010, when you kind of would have been coming out of the age grade stuff into the Munster system. So there were definitely fewer club players making a successful transition at that point. So what was your experience of being an out half?
Yeah, I suppose I was like, I had a bit of football in me, but I was a bit raw in terms of how structured the game was when you go to a different level. Like, you know, and it's only in hindsight that I would really appreciate that as much. You know, like, you go over to UCC and Kevin Kidney is there. Obviously, his dad is Declan, and like, he's played with Praise for 6 years and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, a much more structured game than what we had, and we had a couple of backs moves, and then you play, like, you know. So,
the dummy switch pop,
exactly. Yeah, scissors. Like, but if you don't have that, then, like, you know, I suppose we just went out and played, like, and you weren't coached as much, but it was still enjoyable. Still very good players and quite good teams. Like, I know Highfield had the kind of Paddy Ryan, OB, James Cronin, that kind of crew, and they had a really strong Highfield team the year above me, but you know the way it goes, every 2 years, so we couldn't go near them in 1 year, and then we'd have a good crack off in the second year. But like, it did probably, like, you know, people say, oh, you should have gone to a school and this and that, and I just think I might have gotten lost in a school, you know, being that kind of I wasn't loose at all, but like, I mean, you know, it's more just kind of get the ball and see what you can do kind of thing, as opposed to running the game. And I was definitely a quieter player at that age, and like I say, I was a bit raw, so like, running the game and trying to stamp your authority on it, I did it within my own group, I suppose. But then you step up another level, and that's the part that I really had to improve upon, I suppose. So then if I went into a school, you don't know where you'd have gotten lost or what position fellas would put you in, and, you know, stick you on the wing or put you into nine. And I know a lot of schools players had played different positions, and, you know, it might have worked out, I don't know, but like, I don't regret not going to a school and having things maybe have worked out a little bit easier, you know, because I got to the same place eventually, and it was probably a little bit more satisfying in the end, because you do have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and not defying odds, but like, it's not the most straightforward route, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. Did you ever feel that there was a bit of stigma against you for the fact that you would come through a club as opposed to a school?
No, I don't think there was stigma at all, because, I mean, I still trained with the same kind of age group, and I remember getting to 19s and 20s, and the Prez lads were much better at Olympic lifting and the Scannels. So, like, Niall was a joke at his Olympic lifting. He was very technical, and I hadn't done it, like,
he was,
you know,
his nose left for it.
So those kind of guys had done more weights than what we had done. Like, I remember my weights were done in the bars when I was about 16. I remember just doing lunges, and you still get that smell from an old gym, like the lads would all talk about it, you know, an old school or club gym, like, you know. I remember just trying to do anything at all down there, and the lads have probably had a bit more structure in terms of S&C and different things like that, like, but you catch up, all right, like, but, you know, it could have...
And that less structured approach probably stood you in the long run.
The like less structured approach?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, you have to do things yourself as well, like...
Yeah, whereas I think it's easier to go from being a bit unstructured to structured as opposed to open structured. Like, learn that way, I think it's a bit harder, so... I'd prefer younger players coming up now to have played in an unstructured kind of game plan or system. That's why I would say Connor's, like, say for Jack Crowley, it's quite a good system for him, because he's a good experience, like, outside him, the wingers in the back three, Niall Keneally, and, you know, the way they try and play, I think it'll benefit him in the long run.
Big time, because you're learning to make decisions, like, and I just think the game is based on, I always say this in the dressing room, and it's just the more decisions you can make, the more positive decisions you'll make, the better outcome you have for your team. Like, so if the lads can run around in an unstructured situation and make more decisions themselves, then you're going to learn as a rugby player. Now, I don't like when people say, oh, we're unstructured and we play off the cuff. Like, you don't. There's a structure there, like, absolutely. Thing, yeah. But
there's a philosophy. It's not a structure. There's a philosophy.
But like you said, now, you know, I think I kind of... I take care of a lot of my own stuff in terms of like my S&C and stuff when I was younger. If we were given a program, I would have gone and done it, like, you know. So I had to learn that way, that if I didn't do it, like, I wasn't getting any more help, you know. So being outside of those really structured systems might have helped that way, or else just suited me as well to get the job done. Like, it would have suited OB. The two of us would have come through a lot of the same teams, like, and I know he'd be very focused on what he did on his own as well, like, you know. So it stands to you that way as well.
The fact that you played football to quite a high level, obviously, I didn't realise you played as far as minor with the Bears. That's like, that's a pretty high standard.
Yeah, it was decent, because we, like, I played minor and then we won an under-21. I was young enough, like, and then my last year minor, I actually skipped a rugby match for it. I went into UCC, and you know the way they had a lot of bursaries, and I didn't get a scholarship now or anything, but like, you had a bit of a, you were supposed to play there, you weren't supposed to skip games, like, you know, and I had a bit of a run in with Gary Byrne, who has actually been very good to me, but he gave out to me for skipping the match, which he was dead right. I kind of said to him, it's my last year minor, these are all the friends I grew up with, like, I wasn't going to miss it, and it was kind of October, it just had run on too late, shock. And I think it was actually, it might have been November in the end, but the rugby match ended up being a friendly and then ended up being called off, so I was quite happy with my decision, and we won the minor county. So like, it kind of went out in the high, and we still remember that with all my own friends and club teammates there, like, you know, you still have that kind of memory. It's great. So if people ask me, like, you know, what's the stuff you remember with sport, but like, that would be definitely up there, winning a minor with my own age group, and then, you know, under 21 rugby, I think with UCC we won in All-Ireland, and you know, a lot of those guys are coming back to Carcan at the moment. J2, you know, guys, like,
he lost the semi final to you that year. He beat Lansdowne in the final.
Yeah, Luke O'Dea was playing, wasn't he?
Luke and Paddy would have been playing as well. Yeah.
So it's all these guys coming back, like, to play under 20 rugby, and you know, Cags now and Johnny McCarthy and those guys are all out in Carcan now again, starting to just play social rugby. Which
is that right? Yeah. Is Johnny playing again? Johnny was a guy. I remember we had an under 16s camp, and I didn't really know anyone there, but I remember there was like about 40 of us at it. I remember it was Reagan, it was down in Cork, and Reagan was like, the odds are probably one of you is going to make it. Straight away, I was like, that's Johnny McCarthy. Like, this is not me anyway. But I, like, if he was right, like, I was the only one that actually went on and got a contract. I remember looking around going like, oh, I don't fancy my chances here now, to be honest. But Johnny was an incredible talent. People wouldn't know him for the most part, but God, he could do anything, like, really.
Did he play 12 then as well? Because he's gone back to playing 12 sometimes now, and I just have that in my head that he did go from 7 to 12 and maybe back to 7 a couple of times. You know,
he started playing on the wing for Prez around that time. In our age, he was always a back row.
Yeah.
But yeah, really terrific footballer. But anyway, to come back to GAA, how important do you think it is that guys play as many sports as they can for as long as they can? Because I think you probably see it less now in rugby, particularly forwards. But I, like, particularly GAA and rugby, I mean, guys might have played other sports as well, but it's kind of rare that people would play, like, football and hurling and rugby until, like, beyond the age of maybe 12 or 13 nowadays. But I'd find, like, a lot of the guys I would have played with who started playing rugby at, say, 5 or 6 and didn't play another sport, that actually their skill level would be a lot worse than guys who would have played other sports. So I think it's something that's maybe overlooked a bit. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like, I'd be a big fan of playing a lot of sport, like, and whatever about, like, you know, becoming good at one, but enjoy whatever you can. And then, like, you know, parents shouldn't be deciding that you're playing rugby and that's it. You should just play everything and see what you actually naturally go towards. But, like, I think obviously the skills are transferable as well. You know, you look at a lot of the people that I grew up playing with and were pretty decent at things. They weren't only good at one thing. You know, a lot of them weren't only good at one thing. You look at Sweets, and I always laugh about Sweets because, I mean, he picks up a cricket ball, and I remember the lad saying he threw it out the back of his hand with a spin that he shouldn't be able to do because he never even played cricket. But, like, then he's playing badminton with Ireland, hockey with Ireland, soccer with West Cork, like, and obviously played hurling at under 18 in an All-Ireland semi-final or quarter-final. He scored 3 points from midfield. You know, this kind of crazy stuff. And then he's pretty decent at rugby as well when you get down to it,
he
knows it or not. But, like, there's a lot of those guys. I know the Scandals played football and hurling, and those are thinks he played soccer, but I think Peter Mann is probably one of the only ones that played one thing. Like, you hear Paulie was a very good swimmer, Paddy Butler played golf, you know, everyone played something, like, and Peter's probably the only one stubborn enough to pick one sport and go with it.
Gardening and folding is what it is.
So I think he's one of the only ones. But if you think around the squad, like, I think most people played something, so I'd be a big fan of it. But, like, obviously, you know, you can't do it forever, and going to your last year of minor probably toes the line a small bit. But did you play football?
Yeah, I played brutally, football and hurling and soccer. Actually, I played soccer. Soccer was my first sport. I said when I was about six.
I was actually
quite a decent.
Are you like Kieran Parker, like, who claims he was this holding midfielder? No, trials for Bolton was spraying balls all around.
No, I admit I was limited but effective. Moldy. I think that's probably the best way. Probably the best way to describe me in every sport that I played. Limited but effective. But
you were the young fellow with a big boot. You just booted further.
No,
than everyone
not at
else
all. See, I was tiny until I was 16. Really. I've hobbit genetics. My mother's 5'1" and my dad's 5'7", so I did very well to get 5'10".
Plus fat.
But I played soccer and I played GAA. I started GAA when I was 7, I'd say, and I didn't start rugby until I went to Glenstow when I was almost 13. So, and I hated it until I was 16 because rugby, as I think I might have mentioned before, rugby's no fun when you're just the little fella getting run over by the big fellas. Like it's the worst sport in fact when you're small and you're playing against. That's why I'd be a big fan of kind of weight classifications up till at least like an under 14 or 15, because I think a lot of guys get like I maintain that if I was in a bigger school that had maybe 3 or 4 teams in each year, I would have stopped playing rugby because I got such little enjoyment out of it. But the fact we had so few players that like people who were some weight capable of surviving.
Not tripping over
choice,
your own feet,
really.
Like,
what's that?
You weren't tripping over your own feet, like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was good enough to kind of more or less have a starting position in the first team in Glenstow, like so. But
you know, that weight classification, like, it's very interesting. I don't know how it fully works in New Zealand, and you hear rumours of these things, but like, we all know players who were unbelievable at under 14 level, and they just didn't improve their skills, like, you know. And, and vice versa, like fellas who just couldn't run with the ball had to do different things, like, you know, had to become more clever at using their feet and transferring the ball and passing the ball and kicking the ball, like, and you know, it actually is a very interesting thing.
Those lads always get caught up by the age of 16, 17.
They have an under 85s now at senior level, so they have under and over 85s, which I didn't know actually until I was there just before Christmas. And so they have like a senior under 85 kilo weight division, like they've like they actually they
in school is it?
In just general, like senior rugby, say, would have an under 85s league. Yeah, I didn't know either until I was down there. So I think it's weighted up until
more of an incentive to stay under
another medal there.
But I think the weight classes go up until maybe under 15s, and then it kind of becomes open latter part of school. There's an under 85. So I was there. Dave Toomey, who tells me he listens to this, I don't know if he actually does or not, but he lives on Waiheke Island off the coast of Auckland. So he was hooker for Munster 20s the year before me, year after Mike Sherry. So he came down to New Zealand. He was about 94 kilos, but he said he was going to train with guys, and he was pretty much the only white person there because he joined the club that was full of Pacific Islanders, guys that are kind of in his position, 120, 130 kilo on average. So it was kind of like me playing under 14s. He was just like, he was just getting run over all the time. So he heard about under 85. So he said he dropped about 10 kilos in the space of a week. So it was like cutting for a fight. So you have to weigh in 2 hours before the game. But he lost all the weight too quickly, so he said he'd be kind of playing with borderline concussion almost with dehydration. So he said the reason he knew he had to stop and kind of actually take a few weeks out and do it properly was he tackled a guy in his own team who had tackled someone and was coming back into the defensive line. And he was obviously pillar at a rock and tackled a guy in his own team. And he's like, oh God, no, this isn't healthy. But yeah, I was on to him a couple of weeks ago because they just announced the national under 85s competition. So it's great that like there's an avenue for people to play that continuing, because I know it's a big problem in Ireland, the drop off in playing sport. What was your experience, Dong? Did you play other sports other than rugby when you were young?
I played soccer for a year or two. I would have played a lot of tennis when I was younger. I would have played anything that was going, really, and like when we were down in West Cork in the summer and stuff, really, anything that was going on I was involved in. So
I suppose if you're in a position like 9, you were probably always a 9, were you?
They tried to move me to 10 at under 13s. It lasted probably half a game. I enjoyed a lot of sports, but I didn't play like officially with teams. I played soccer for about a year and a half with a team, right, or a half a year up in Douglas Hall when I was very young, but I would have played a lot of sports, but not with actual teams, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I suppose if you were playing at 9...
Never played hurling. I would love to have played hurling.
Yeah. I was a much more effective hurler, but much more effective hurler, but a much better footballer, if that makes sense. So, like, my hurling skills were very limited, but I was excellent at getting scores.
Did you ever see the hurling when the subs come on? and they make a beeline straight to the guy there. And they just start nudging each other on the shoulder. I'd say that you were good at that though. Nice low to the ground, center of gravity, barreling into leads.
Well, no, that was kind of, well, no, I was too small for that to be a remit, but I used to come off the bench. We won an under 16 B County with Carrignavar in 2000, and I'm going to say six, maybe five. And I was a year young, but like that whole campaign, basically, I'd come on with 20 minutes to go and without fail, I'd score a goal, like at least one goal. So, and that was kind of like, invariably, it was a breaking ball on the ground that I'd pull on it and end up in the back of the net. That's that was kind of the limit of my hurling ability. But I always enjoyed football far more. But I wouldn't mind playing Gaelic football again, to be honest. I do miss it. I don't think I'd be any good at it.
I toyed with it going back when I retired. I just thought, like, you know, fellas would go, oh, you play rugby again with Conn? I was like, you know, even if I could, why would you go and put yourself through that? You know, contact on a Tuesday, don't get on what you're doing. But no, like when you're...
I do the contact.
You know? I see that. But no, like, you know, going back and having people question, like, oh, why aren't you playing at Munster, but you're playing with Conn and all that kind of stuff. So if I was able to do anything, I actually wanted to play with the Bars against my brother was playing there, and I thought it'd be great crack. Now it turns out it actually is a lot of commitment. But I wasn't. I ended up organising a game of AstroTurf with the lads for a good few weeks on the trot. Like, and I don't know, about 6 or 8 weeks into it, I was nearly dragging my right leg around the place. I was like, ah, oh, that confirms it. I'm not able.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been able for it at all. Like, but in my head, I was kind of thinking, will I go back and do this? Like, it would have been great crack. I used to love playing football. It's kind of less structured as well. I know it's getting, there's a lot of systems and a lot of that kind of stuff, but like, it's not as structured as a linear game like rugby. Like.
You just mentioned the hamstring there. Like, we won't labour on it, obviously. But like, are you able to kind of keep yourself fit now? Does it cause you much trouble day to day?
I think it's been causing me trouble with my knee since I nearly retired. Like, and about a year of that, I ignored it. And the last 2 years, I actually have been trying to rehab my knee, which isn't getting any better. So I've been sick of it, and I probably don't do the right thing all the time with it either. Your head gets carried away. But like, my actual hamstring isn't that bad. I did play a tag tournament with my sister's work crowd during the summer. Again, my brother was playing, and I thought the two triplets couldn't get away with playing without me. Like, so I said, I'd go over for the crack, and I destroyed myself. It was like 5 15-minute games. Or it was 3 group games of 15 minutes, and if you won that, you go through to a kind of a quarterfinal, semi-final thing. And at the quarterfinal, I was like, oh, please don't win, because I was starting to get fairly sore. Like, and it actually put me out. Like, I do my gym work, and I do my RDLs and stuff, obviously stretching your hamstring, and... for about 6 weeks after, I couldn't do an RDL properly because the stop-start kind of 5 15 minutes killed me, you know. So okay. It's good that it gives me a kind of a reminder that I can't do those things, because otherwise I kind of get carried away with myself and want to play again. When you watch a match or you watch your own age group getting through and getting Irish caps and stuff like that, it does make you get carried away somewhat. But so I like the reminder at times, but then too many reminders, it makes me frustrated on the other side. So a nice happy medium.
It's a difficult balance to strike, I suppose, for anyone coming off the back of a bad injury. I want to kind of capitalise on the fact that I have a 9 and 10 in the room and talk a little bit more technically about the game of rugby. So one thing I suppose in the last 3 years, particularly since you finished up, that has broken into test rugby, it's actually only the last kind of 18 months really, is this reintroduction of an offensive tactical kicking game, which wasn't really there for quite a while. Obviously Ireland dominated for the bulk of the last number of years because box kicking was the fundamental part of the game, and that was almost seen as something that couldn't be dealt with really for the most part, whereas I know England have really blazed the trail with it, having essentially like a 10 and 12 that can play make, and a 13 and a 15 that can kick in a really dangerous manner as well. And even now, I suppose we see Ben Youngs doing a bit more. Where has that come out of? Are you surprised that that's kind of been the key that's unlocked what Ireland were so good at for so long?
I think teams were just so focused on frontline defence that it was literally hard to attack. So obviously if the space in the backfield, you have to try and figure out how to get it there. So one tactic obviously is putting up the box kick that Ireland were doing, but the evolution of that is that obviously once they start, if you're kicking from the side and kicking a box kick, they might have two lads over there, which means the space on the other side. So you still need to set up to, if it is covered, shift it out a couple of channels, maybe kick on the run then, or take the space with the passing, and as they close, kick it through to the space. Or even, you see a lot now, I think England were doing it, kicking it down the middle of the pitch, just finding grass and getting a hard chase on it, and just making the other team kick back. And then when they kick back, maybe they don't make touch, or they don't get the proper connection, it's kind of a chaos on then, and that's when the counter-attack can be deadly. I think it came up a few years ago that most tries were coming from counter-attacks as opposed to set-piece, like first phase attacks. So that just showed that while people may think that one or two kicks, it's kind of boring and negative, that there is positives coming out of it, that people are getting more counter-attack ball, especially if teams are kicking badly or putting enough pressure on the other team after they do kick. So I know people think, oh, Ireland box kick, Munster box kick a lot. Yeah, they do, but I think what they probably let themselves down is not having that outlet of, once the box kick has been overplayed, that they shift it out, maybe kick off 10 to the opposite winger, or as they kick it down the middle, or use hands, get it to the far touchline and then kick it along the ground. Like Andrew Conway is very good at it. He obviously worked hard in his run, man. He used to be very good at it. The Leinster lads started doing it originally under Joe Schmidt, so I was kind of surprised that they hadn't implemented it more with Ireland. Obviously, maybe the defences are, again, that bit better again at international level. I don't know, but yeah, I'd be interested to hear what Johnny is.
This is defence, though, like, isn't it? Like, you'd see even the England Wales game at the weekend, a lot of crossfield kicking, like, kick passing, like, you know, and it's just because that winger is playing so narrow now with this. You know, the 15 still has to have an eye on the backfield, and the winger is going to come up quite hard. So there is a bit of space on the edge, but like, you have to execute that quite well, or you're just giving away possession. You know, so like, Dan Bigger is quite a good kicker, but then you've got George Ford, Owen Farrell, who are both well able to kick and put the ball where they want it. But yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and
Henry Slade,
like, the last day, he was such a stylish player, you know, and then he can actually put the ball in his foot as well and get quite a good outcome, you know. But like, they've just kicking options everywhere, and they did it to Ireland last year in the Six Nations, which was this big shock. That, you remember, Tyler, when he came over, was talking about Coffin Corner, wasn't he?
Yeah,
the Canterbury would always, was it?
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We were never set up to kick aimlessly, like, so yeah. If we were going to scrum, we'd tailor our setup to a 4-2 or a 3-3 or a 5-1, whatever, and see what their backfield did, and then whatever way they set up, we'd manipulate it so that if we can kick and find the space there. But it's an attacking kick, it's a kick to either get the ball back, so it's not a long kick, it could be a chip, it could be a grubber, or to make it a contest. So if you do put the long grubber in, that their players come into, but we're also coming in, it's not just a clean take for them. So it's not seen as a defensive kick, it's actually an attacking kick. And as I said, it wasn't set up that we were just going to kick for the sake of kicking, we were manipulating our own setup to manipulate their backfield so we could choose the right attacking kick to play. So you saw sometimes we'd go to Rory off a right hand scrum at the 12 and he'd do a crossfield kick, or he'd, if their winger did close up the shot, he'd actually change it to a long driver into the far corner, because obviously we'd have two on the other side of scrum, so their 15 and winger couldn't leave there. So it was just, as I said, we were trying to manipulate that. And
am I right in saying we're seeing less of that this season?
Yeah, I think we kind of we did it very well, like Raz and Jacques' first season. Then kind of the next, we kind of lost it, cause we was, so we used to call it a poker setup as well. We was going to scrum. Scrum is just an example I'm using now, but we kind of concentrated more on open play because obviously we were box kicking a lot. So then we tried to bring in the next step, of which was you could set up for the box kick, but if the call came, you could just, rather than the 9 kick it, you could shift it out to the 10, who can then either kick it or shift it out another few channels and then put it through, or whatever way it worked. But yeah, I thought we used to be very good at it. And again, obviously, maybe things change in the global game. You know, the people see those trends and they decide to change little bits and pieces. So I actually can't remember why we stopped doing it. Or,
but like, when obviously retired that first year, but the difference was that you were kicking out to get the ball back, as opposed to kicking to relieve pressure. You were kicking to transfer pressure. And I think that was the biggest thing that Razzie brought in. And then obviously Jack had that as well as the defensive,
and they took
coach,
the pressure off the kickers as well. So like, for a box kick, they used to always say it needs to go 25 metres and hang for 5 metres or 6 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't have the biggest kick in the world, I don't have a long lever. Like, if I kick it 25 metres, there's no way I'm going to get it to hang in there for 6 seconds. Like,
yeah, right.
Whereas Murray could kick it 30 metres and let it hang in there for eight seconds. Like, yeah. So he just has a bigger kick. So he, like, Jack and Razzie came in, they were like, as long as it goes 10 metres, because then everyone's on side, he says, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Try not, as long as it doesn't go less than 10, we might have we'll have a word check, but if it goes more than 10, he says, don't worry about it, you've done your job, as long
that's
as you get
Duncan
in the contest.
And Duncan and Sweets became best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good in the air.
Yeah, exactly. So it was, but no, look, as I said, for me, it took massive pressure off the kicker, which, like, I won't lie, I used to go into games dreading that I'm going to have to kick the ball, especially first kickoff, we received it. I'll kick it long to our 8, get tackling 22, and I'd have to kick it. But here we go now. Have to kick it 25 metres and hang for 6 seconds,
yeah,
or whatever. Like, it was just straight away, or putting yourself under pressure. Like,
yeah, there is a balance, isn't there? Like, you see some wasteful wingers where they just don't know what else to do. They don't want to take the contact. They just kind of throw it on their toe, and it's not a great kick. Like, whereas if you look at Daly, like you said, with England, it's a decision that he makes, finds a bit of space, And it's not just kick it away for no reason. Like, they're, it's a decision that he makes at the line, you know, and looks up into the backfield. But they know from their analysis as well that Ireland and teams are playing, you know, you talk about these 13-2 defences where there's only two men in the backfield. And if you can manipulate that, they might end up with one in the backfield. But teams are even going with one in the backfield these days. I know Wales do it quite a bit, don't they? But Lee Halfpenny covering everything. Like, and that's fine when you're Felix Jones, who's the fittest man under the sun.
Yeah. But that's what you're saying, that wingers nowadays are told to read body language. So obviously, as soon as someone shapes the kick, they should be, they're off flat, but they're dropping to catch that on the full and not letting it hit the grass. But
is it going to change the type of centre that we see at test level and the level below that now, do you think? Because I know, say, from about probably early to mid 2000s, that kind of stereotypical bashers, black like Rob Henderson, Kevin Maggs, I suppose Manu Tuilagi nowadays, that was expected to run hard at people, run over people and hit people, but not really expected to pass the ball, certainly not expected to kick. Whereas now, as I said, we've essentially got two world class tens playing 10 and 12 for England, and then as I said, if you've got people outside who are capable of turning people very well and putting teams on the back foot, like potentially in a back line you have like five or six out of the seven people who'd be really comfortable taking a kicking option rather than running back.
The Australians always be like that, and the New Zealanders as well, like they always had, say, Larkham and Gittu 10 and 12, or Gittu and Elton Flatley, or Larkham and Elton Flatley, whatever way it worked out. New Zealand were the same. Carter played 12 first when he came on the scene, so they always have those two.
But they put Nanu under pressure to actually kick the ball as well, and
he became an unbelievable kicker.
He became very good at it. But like, I think, like you said, if you've got four players in the back line that can kick, you can use the other lads up the middle. But like, it's very, as a coach, then you're looking at it going, do I give up my go forward up the middle? But if you do give up your go forward, then your 13 just becomes a two-leggy, like, you know. And you do have to have that balance in the centre, I would say. You can't have a Farrell with, you know, Henry Slade in there, then you don't have much of a balance there either, you know, because now they're well capable, but you don't get the same destructive carry up the middle, whereas you can just throw Tuilagi on the hard line, or Billy Vunipola as a shortened line out up the middle, and then you can use your two lads to play either side of the ruck, like, you know. But there's definitely a balance thing, how many kickers you have, what's the balance of right leg and left leg, and see what you can do from there. But obviously when you go down to different levels, you don't have as many options of kicking and balance and whatever you're saying there. But like, you know, if you have a star-studded international team, it's definitely something that you've got more options to do.
I was actually only thinking that about Scotland. Obviously Hastings is going quite well, and they're talking about Finn Russell coming back in the summer.
Play one of them at 12.
Could
they play?
What was the latest
apparently
on that?
Himself and Townsend have had
a drink together.
They're on the piss together. Townsend went to bed after two, and thing didn't. But so I was just wondering, would they maybe look at that?
But obviously, even with Hogg with them as well, at 15, he takes the restarts, and you know, he kicks the touch sometimes, and he's got a weapon of a
but I just even think the fact that not just kicking aside, being two ball players playing.
The way they play as well, you could definitely benefit from getting the two lads on the ball, and they play
it's like having your best players in the pitch. They're both talented guys, so.
I think having the two playmakers is almost becoming a minimum expectation really of teams. I think it really stands out when a team doesn't have a second playmaker either at 12 or at 15. It
breaks my heart.
It's such an obvious, I wouldn't say a solution to a problem, but it's such an obvious strength that you can equip yourself with as a coach. I mean, surely you'd want people having to watch defences, having to watch two playmakers instead of one.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, if you can shift the ball, you see it with some very one-dimensional teams where, like, you know the ball's not going outside, then those defences can shoot up hard and they don't have any other decision to make, like, you know. So, again, like, are you going to get that down the levels? Like, you know, AIL, even going into professional rugby, it's rough squads. You lose a guy, all of a sudden your game plan has to change because you don't have that kicker or ball player at 12. You know, so you can't have that either. You have to set up your whole game for a squad, I suppose. It's easier when you've got everyone available, but it's not as easy if you're going to miss one or two key guys to that. Like, so as you go up the levels, it might become easier. I don't know.
Do Ireland have the personnel to kind of introduce that real attacking threat of a kicking game?
It's not like the kicking game. I think, as we said, like having two playmakers at 10 and 12 is a massive thing. Like, we're not saying that they need to kick the ball more or whatever. Like, as I said, Leinster were first ones in Ireland really that started doing those like attacking kicks on the end or on the edge of the line. If you notice, like, I remember Dave Kearney, they used to be putting them through and getting like, they wouldn't score every time, but they were getting a few scores off it. So,
or a line out in 10 meters, like, out, you know.
Even a win there is, you kick it, land short line, they pick it up and they get bundled into touch. So that's a win there. But I think Ireland have the definitely have the players to be able to do it. It's just, I don't know what the philosophy is in terms of that. And
you would think they have to develop the skill a small bit more, though. Mm-hmm. You know, they definitely have the players and the personnel to do that, but it's not in their mind, and it's not, you don't see them doing it.
It doesn't look like it's a philosophy.
No, and it's not like, you know, they see a certain defence, they don't revert to that either. Like, it's not in their minds to do it. It's not a natural thing for them to look for at the moment. I think it's a lot about possession and retaining the possession for as long as you can until you get a score or a penalty, like, you know. So
yeah, the hangover from the Schmidt style of coaching is still, I think, quite evident, particularly when the heat comes on. Like, yeah, they revert to type high percentage games, low risk games, or low risk tactics rather. So it's going to take a while for them. I would imagine an appetite is there to do something differently, but it's obviously like with any team, you're going to revert to type.
Dummy pass. Shape the pass. Yeah, no, that's not being funny. Yeah. Joe Schmidt was thinking hit the guy in the chest, so he doesn't have to. Like, he just catches it and carries it. Like, but
he's not about just getting fellas into the contact, carry them through, get more people back on your feet, and play with more numbers and stuff. But like, you're right,
makes the defence think. Like,
but even throw,
holding the ball in two hands and shaping the pass, it just sits people down for
throw a pass, because I mean, like, the Ringrose or someone at 13, like, just get the ball to him early and allow him to do something, you know. And the likes of Conway might get a bit more ball in the wing, and Stockdale might come back to his form that people are giving out about, because I mean, like, give him a bit of space, and his chip over the top has become his kind of specialty as well. Like, give him a bit of space with a scrambling defence.
We're not saying you're going to make massive line breaks off, but you'll get easier carries, softer tackles. I just think it's
easy in theory, isn't
exactly.
We'd be international coaches if we had all the answers.
We're sitting in the ditch.
But you would love to see them kind of throw a small bit more while being effective, not just throwing. Like, Scotland can throw the ball and lose games. There's no one.
Ireland did throw it a bit the last day, but I think they went out the back against England. Probably went out the back too much.
Yeah, that's right.
But when England go so kamikaze off the lane, like Maro told you, just didn't care who the ball was going to, like, he was going to get him, you know, those kind of things. So it can be quite difficult. Like, it becomes a time when you do have to go back through it again. And if you're going to lose that contact going through it, you're going to lose most games
anyway.
That's where you go back to, do you have your biggest ball carriers at 12 and 13, and can they get you on the front foot? And guys mightn't be the best ball players in the world, but with a bit more time, they might become that, you know. So there's definitely a balance, which is difficult to get.
Obviously, no Six Nations again now this weekend. So he knows it's more important. He knows the priorities are. So no game this weekend, no game last weekend for Ireland either. It's kind of an unprecedented period, really, for Irish rugby, in the sense that obviously the two test games have been cancelled, but Munster coming off the back of a 2-week break, and realistically, I think the Pro 14 are still pretending that the games against Treviso are going to go ahead, but Munster and Treviso... Are they officially cancelled now? I was talking to the lads last weekend, and Pro 14 apparently assured everyone that the games were definitely going to go ahead, but I would assume they're not going to now. So Munster are looking at not playing a game until into April now at this point, which I think maybe 5 weeks.
Is the
Connacht
match
that was confirmed today? The 30th of May, though, wasn't it?
Oh, was it May or March?
I read it wrong, but I thought it was
the 30th of March. Yeah, I could be wrong. Yeah,
but what do you think the vibe is going to be like inside now when people know that there's no game in the horizon for potentially a month? Like,
unbelievable crack. Keep you uppies all day.
It is difficult, though, isn't it? Kind of, even if you're, I was thinking about this recently, and even if you're in a hotel and it's bucketing down outside, the doubt kind of does start to creep in, and you're trying to keep it away from yourself just so you don't buy into that doubt. And it's hard to keep your kind of eyes on the prize, like, isn't it? But even if you look at the international scene at the moment, like guys like John Cooney, and I know there's a whole lot of talk about it, but guys like that who are looking for their chance. And it is like, you know, I would reckon that if I was in there as a coach, you would think that you'd look at the Six Nations as kind of spreading the game time, you know, not exactly picking your first choices, but definitely spreading game time with 3 and 2 games for some guys who are neck and neck. And I think the 2 games have now been lost for some guys like him, you know, and it does become difficult, because by the time October comes around, you don't know who's in form or who's after regaining form or different things like that. It's just a different, the lay of the land is different, like, you know. So it's probably very disappointing for guys like him, especially the Italy game has always been a chance for guys to stake a claim in some sense. So
not even if he doesn't start, but to get more, maybe 30 minutes or 30
exactly.
But even at provincial level, I mean, guys now, say Irish guys won't have played these last 2 games, so they're going to be hungry for games whenever there is a match. So guys who are looking forward to, again, games against Italian teams are traditionally ones where...
And you do that, don't you, as a player? Like, when you're kind of a development player or looking on the edge of the squad, you kind of try to earmark.
You know your weeks where your chances are probably going to come in. No matter how good or bad you go, these are the weeks that are coming.
But they won't be coming anymore, so like, it is difficult for them. But it's also, like, I mean, it is shit crack without started having games for 4 or 5 weeks at a time, like, you know, it's difficult to stay motivated at what's going on, like, whether you're supposed to do more gym sessions or
I'd imagine they'd have a few lads there now that all, like, say Billy Holland and Archer and them, they won't be I'm sure they'll try and curtail the doing mindless drills to for the foreseeable future, you know, they'll try and integrate a bit of crack into it, whether it's just even a game of tip rugby is unbelievable crack,
or a game of football or something like that, and a few points as well.
Like, I'd imagine it, like, one day they should just turn up to train and go, right lads, we're all going to the pub or something, like, but whether that'll happen, I don't know.
I was waiting pretty much my entire time in Munster for that. I don't think it ever happened where we got a surprise and then in Grenoble basically, like, the season, like, the writing was on the wall more or less with regard to the season, and they were like, God, we kind of need to get the lads together. So I think we were looking good for a while just after Christmas, and then we'd lost a few games in a row, and it was kind of crisis time again. And they brought us kind of down to, what was the name of the lake? Anyway, this lovely lake about 40 minutes away from Grenoble, and it was obviously sunny. It was like April time or whatever. I'd gotten the piss for the day, played like volleyball and football on the beach all day. And then that night, there was an incident in town involving a flare in a pub, and the lad responsible got fired anyway. Oh, so literally couldn't have gone worse.
never happened again.
Like, the only time it could happen to us is when we were, do you remember, was it 2 or 3 years ago, the weather was so bad, so we had to go to Limerick we were flying out from Limerick, so the weather was going to be so bad, they were like, oh, we'd come up the night before because you might make it up in the morning. No, the weather was shot, we shouldn't have driven up in the first place. the snow was so bad and everything, like, so we were staying in the Castle Troy, and it was about 7 o'clock, we're like, this, no chance of this game going ahead, like, that Edinburgh was on lockdown and everything. You think it was away in Edinburgh and, like, a load of games have been called off, so we were kind of sitting there, like, there's no chance this is going ahead, like, so the car continued at a lash of points, and we were kind of waiting, like, for the call, like, and we knew it wasn't going ahead, but we had to wait for it to be confirmed, like, so then we were finally, like, we sent a text, we were like, we're not staying in Limerick, if we stay here now, he's like, we're not going to get back to Cork. Am I going to be stuck here indefinitely? Like, because the weather, it was a Craig Island, the roads have been taken in. The roads have been taken in. So we were like, no, we're not staying here. So Kevin O'Byrne was there. He obviously doesn't drink. So he drove us back with myself and a few of the other lads, had like 5 or 6 points. You're happy as Larry coming back. And the game was called off. So we had a grand time for ourselves.
See, good decision making there.
Yeah. The veterans of the group made a good decision.
Kind of bit, just before we finish up, we might touch on probably the most notable incident from the weekend, involving Joe Marler grabbing either Alwyn Jones's either penis or testicles. I'm not sure which it was exactly. I think it was
a bit of everything.
It was the dick. but yeah, it's one of those ones where I suppose it's different for us having been on the inside of that circle.
What do you mean?
As in, like,
you think it's messing
with
you?
We don't appreciate.
Like,
well, you can look at something like they're Lions teammates, and they obviously know each other well. And I think, look, like we've seen stuff like that.
Alwyn Jones didn't help him after, he really could.
Well, this is it. This is what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I think most people assume that most people who are involved in professional rugby or have been at one point or another would have assumed it would have been kind of played down or whatever. And I think the litmus test was his reaction to it afterwards, because
his tweet, like, Joe Marler's tweet.
Yeah, I did. He just doesn't care, though. He's the right man to do it. Like,
but it's very different. No, go on. Go on.
No, just I was thinking about this because one of the lads sent it into, like, the WhatsApp group, and I had seen it. But, you know, like you said, being involved in a group like that before, you kind of turn a blind eye to that. Like, it's obviously meant as a bit of messing or a wind up, one or the other. But whatever way, there's no real malice in it. But I was just thinking, like, you can't do that now. You know, there's definitely going to be something come of it. But then you get the other side of it, like, where people are going, you can't do that in the workplace. And it's like, it's not really a workplace. Like,
there's no crack anymore.
You know, but you know, it's not like a workplace. You can't say it's like going into the office and doing it to a fella in the same context. So, like, people have gone too far.
I'm going to the office now tomorrow and do it.
Yeah, see how you get on.
But, like, I don't know what I'd say.
But you see, like, the messing that he kind of did, but, you know, with all the goings on now and equality and different things, like, you just can't really take the piss out of it like that now anymore. Like, especially, I think he just got caught that the camera was right in front of him when he did it. Like, he obviously didn't know where
and
the camera was.
And he was staring at the camera.
Yeah. You know, but you wouldn't like to see him get a massive ban for it or anything, but he definitely needs to get a slap in the wrist.
Yeah, and there'd be a sanction, all right. Like, people were posting screenshots of the actual law regarding, I think it's low end of the scale, 12 weeks, 6 months or something like that.
He's got a few incidents there saying he's going to get 12 weeks.
He's a couple of red cards anyway, at least. I'm not sure what they were for exactly, but I do know he's had suspensions in the past, so that probably won't work in his favour. Potentially his reaction online afterwards won't work.
But that was sure he doesn't really care. It just doesn't bother him.
Yeah, but I think it is like it'd be very interesting to see what happens with it. I don't know. Is it, like, the siding commissioner should have thrown that in by now. I don't know. Has he? I didn't hear anything about it in the news today.
What?
Like, if the siding commissioner is taking a case, that
three of Tuilagi and Tuilagi.
But like, it is disappointing enough from Alwyn Jones. Like, you know,
that's not disappointing. But to be fair, he could not say anything.
I think he could have just downplayed it. Let the siding commissioner deal with it. He would have gotten.
I'd imagine, if you have the right report, I wouldn't like to
see him kind of asking reference. For it in a sense or saying it's not good enough. But like, I think
he was in foul form.
He was losing.
Yeah, of course.
Like another fellow would say, look, I know Joe a long time. He obviously took the piss at a time when I didn't want to, and whatever happens. Like, you know, I think he could have gone that way about it as well, but like, you know, you can't blame the guy either, like, you know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens. All right.
Well, I'm more interested in Tuilagi with the power that comes from him flying through the air like that. Like, I was only saying to somebody today that, like, I don't know, the amount of tackles that you've seen from him like that, but just because he brings so much power that he can't get away with it. Like, other guys get away with one or two of those because you don't have the effect afterwards in the contact area. Like, but
I saw him live actually nearly murder Dennis Fogarty in Musgrave
Park.
No
better, man.
Leicester. Oh my God. I think Foggs took a good hard line off me, so I hit him. But like, Tuilagi was only 18, I think. He had this thing where he's just hovering the back, like in behind the front line. And if you saw a guy, he'd pick him out. Like, so he obviously saw Foggs coming, knew he was getting it. And he absolutely killed him. Like, it was like a wrestling move, like, you know, where they slapped their back and then they thump off the tennis. Like,
he is too powerful, though. Like, think of another, like I was saying, Matthew Bastro, big guy, doesn't move like that, you know. And there's no one, I think, his size that actually packs the punch that he packs. Like, he's lethal. Like, you know, so you do have to, like, it's his natural power and strength, like, but you mean you have to learn how to manage it or fell.
Yeah, what I mean, like, he's tackling illegally there. Like, he's tackling with the wrong shoulder. Like, if he's going to tackle illegally there, he'd be tackling with the other shoulder in general anyway.
The rest is supposed to get hurt.
His arm is straight, and like, I was having a back and forth with the guy online who was saying, but
I thought he might have misjudged it because he might have kind of got lassoed around the ankle, so he kind of dropped all of a sudden.
Yeah, but no, but I'm,
it still didn't look right. Yeah. No, I'll say that. But
he came in from a distance.
I think he misjudged him. Like, yeah.
He didn't mean to get him in the head, but he's still meaning to body check him essentially.
But you'd be surprised the amount of people that put the head on the wrong side there. I know, like, the danger is he steps back inside you.
That's
and then
what
your
mean,
head
I
is under
about what shoulder he was hitting. Yeah. It was more, I think he actually just thought he was going to be further down the line.
But if he wasn't,
caught him by the ankles, it actually literally stopped him dead.
But if he's not so destructive there, like, you do. And it's George North.
He got clung there. And
but he's like, if he catches people most of the time with the head wrong side of the tackle, they're going to be in trouble as well. Like, you know.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
But yeah, he's having. Did you see him two weeks ago?
Every man creamed him in France. The kick. Was it France?
Yeah, and he's going flat out at the moment. Like, I mean, it doesn't look great for him, does it?
No.
Jeez, no. Like, he's had a lot of very bad ones. And
bigger
is
the same.
Course,
bigger
has
had like 6 or 7, isn't he?
I think they said this.
High profile ones as well. Like, North has been rolled back on after clearly being knocked out.
But that's it. I think nearly everyone he gets, he's kind of losing consciousness. Like, and they said that's his sixth. So can you imagine how many there actually are? You know, if they're claiming six, and that could have been 7 if they're claiming it to be anyway.
He was still down for a while, wasn't he, as well?
I think so.
That one had happened that day.
Yeah.
I remember I was having a similar conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and I was telling them about the time when Sweets got knocked out after the kickoff there. I was trying to find the clip on YouTube. Like, it is, I don't care, it's hilarious. It's a serious incident, it is so funny. So basically, because it's not on YouTube, so people can't go on and look at it, but Sweets chased his heart off a kickoff. I don't know who he was tackling, was it? I'm not sure who caught the ball anyway, but he was knocked out first play of the game. Or not knocked out, but he was dazed quite badly. But anyway, the ball carrier brings it in to the ruck, Ulster recycling the ball, and Paddy Jackson's kind of waiting for the ball. Sweets anyway, eventually gets to his feet, goes back to the Ulster side and stands at first receiver with his hands up in the air looking for the ball off. Who was it, Paul Marshall or someone? And to be fair, Paddy Jackson comes in and kind of like takes him by the hips and just like escorts him out of the way. He's like, yeah, just step over there, man, will you? So that was the end of his game. But
that could have just been Sweets on a bad day, would it? Just end up on the other side of the road.
He had two raw Vulevans again that day, as he'd say himself. He says Vullivans at me just to I say Vullivans.
Just like Tuolagi. Have you ever seen his one of the older brothers, Henry? I mean, Alessandro is obviously the kind of probably the best known guy, but Henry is I would say at least twice the size of man who kind
was
of
he like the guy who decapitated Danny Barnes that time over in the preseason friendly as well.
Oh, that
might have been Manu actually. It was one of them.
Alessandro probably because
apparently he nearly murdered him. I wasn't there, but we saw the video of it. Like, oh, Jesus! Yeah,
so Henry, I didn't meet him, but I bought pork off him.
More on that.
We played the Pro D2 final against Perpignan, so he lives in Perpignan, but his business is like pig on a spit. So like Pacific Islanders, they're like kind of pigs on spits is a big thing of theirs. They do it very well too. But he kind of does mobile, like pig on a spit van or whatever. And he was there, and a few of the lads would have known him, so we were buying the pork off him afterwards. But the lads were telling me, I hadn't seen him play a whole pile, but the lads were telling me he was an eight, so he'd stand on the end of the dead ball line, and he'd start running when the ball was kicked, basically. And like
the rugby league one.
Yeah. And like whoever caught it, he'd just be on their shoulder to take it, and he'd have like a 25, 30 meter run up. Borderline dangerous stuff. Yeah, like,
what are you supposed to do?
Because there's clips of him on YouTube, like
he
running
played
over
against Munster a few times at Leicester.
Did he? Yeah.
Was he with the Dragons for a while as well? Or was that the other?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
they all played at Leicester, like Henry Alessandro and.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
But he's a monster. Like, it was quite funny. But yeah, it's just that raw kind of Pacific Island power. So there's very little you can do. I mean, I would have liked to be the guy trying to in the front line,
definitely not
running at him to tackle him. All right, lads. It's probably all we have time for. I know Johnny has other engagements that are far more pressing.
Other earners had
anyway. Thanks a million for coming in. It was great to catch up with you, and that was an interesting chat. Dunk, as always, thank you. And if we're not stood down again,
we never got to your big news over the weekend.
Oh yeah, I got engaged at the weekend. By the way, fair play.
So, the dodgy knee got
it. Yeah. So to my beautiful fiance, Sarika. So, a good old weekend down in Ballyvillan.
Well, Casanova here, tell us the fine story.
Go on, tell us more.
Great story.
So, yeah, string quartet was arranged to be there upon arrival.
Actually, don't tell us, you're showing everyone off. Edit it out. It's done, we're done.
So thanks, Johnny, and thanks, Dunk. Talk to you next week.
Yep, thank you. See you next week.
Privilege.
Lovely.